If you don't feel good, you're not going to be ambitious and driven to go and earn and produce. If you don't feel good and motivated, you're not going to feel ambitious and driven to go change your physiology, your physique.
It is not just the VO2 max measurement. It is the process of getting there.
More than ever, information is no longer guarded by the system and the opposition.
Alzheimer's disease, now I don't know if you know the statistics, 55 million people worldwide currently have the disease. That number is said to triple by the year 2050.
The pharmaceutical companies create the education that the doctors get at medical school.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's Louisa Nicola. I am a neurophysiologist and human performance coach. My guest today is Bedros Koulian. He's an entrepreneur, author, speaker, podcaster, and a business coach. Is America's healthcare system broken? The opposition wants us sick, fat, and broke. The opposition in this instance is the government. And the government is funded by the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical companies, and by the big food conglomerates who are feeding us overly processed garbage that keeps people sick, fat, and dependent on the system itself. In this episode, Bedros shares how you can rise above mediocrity, live freely, and he teaches us what traits you need to resist the control and manipulation of the opposition. We really dive into health policy in this one. It's a really good one. I hope you like it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Bedros Koulian. We'll just start with a bit about you and then we'll move into it.
Okay. You know, the best thing about me, I always say, is like, if you just picture Cinderella, I'm the Cinderella man. And like, what a great lottery ticket that I got when my dad and mom decided that we're going to escape the Soviet Union in 1980. And I say Cinderella man because I'm 49 now. If I were to have grown up in Armenia, which was part of the Soviet Union at that time, I would have probably grown up either being a mechanic, a taxi driver, and nothing wrong with any of that stuff. But I'd be growing up in a corrupt government, communism, with very little opportunity. Yet I was 6 years old in 1980 when we escaped, and my dad had the foresight that he wanted his three kids, me being the youngest, to have more opportunities and freedom than he did. And he was very, for someone coming from a communist country, he was very in tune with the Western culture. Like, he listened to the Beach Boys. He wore Adidas shoes. I remember he had Jordache jeans. Back then, they were the equivalent of Levi's. he had Ray-Ban sunglasses. So you talk about like someone who was like a hidden American in a communist country. But he knew that we wouldn't have the opportunities that what he felt we deserved. And so he gathered up 25,000 rubles. And the story of him doing that is fascinating. He was a tailor. He worked in a big men's clothing manufacturing plant. And he tells me and my sister the story of how they give you so much material, and then they give you the pattern of the suit jacket or the vest or the pants. And they expect certain number, like amount of spoilage, right, in terms of material. Well, he would put the material so close, tightly together, that for every like 10 or 15 suits he would make, he'd have enough material left to make a whole new suit. Wow. And that was kind of off the record. Mm. So he would take that home. He would make pants, vest, shirt, suit, whatever. And he would sell that on the black market. That's how he made the 25,000 rubles that we needed to bribe some government officials in the Soviet government to allow us to go on vacation, if you will, and I say that in quotes, into Italy, because Italy were, at the time, were communist sympathizers. So we went on, quote unquote, vacation to Italy. So we had to make it look like we're going on a holiday, on a vacation with just two suitcases and nothing else. We spent 10 days in Italy, in Rome, where my dad and my older brother went to the American consulate and, you know, said, look, we're political refugees. We're escaping the Soviet Union. If we go back, they'll for sure send my dad to Siberia and kill him. We want to go into the United States. So they pumped my dad for information because he was a member of the Communist Party. Not by choice, but he had a choice. But if he had said no, when they asked him to be a member, it was the equivalent of signing your own death warrant. And so he said yes. And he said, of course, with honor, right? And so they pumped my dad for information, the American government did in Rome. And then we moved to California And the only reason my dad chose California is he knew that the weather was beautiful. And, you know, Armenia gets very cold and rainy and snowy. And from there, it was just living off, you know, food stamps, Section 8 housing, government-assisted housing. We didn't understand the language. We didn't know the culture. But we made do the best we could. And my dad did a great job brainwashing me, me being the youngest, 6 years old. And he said, this country can give you anything you want in life as long as you're able to serve this country in some capacity, right? And the people in it. And so to me, it was a no-brainer. When you're young, you're more impressionable. And your dad and mom say something, you're going to believe it. And so I did. And I grew up thinking, all right, well, what can I do to serve people? And so I was kind of a chubby kid. The Armenian diet's not the best diet. Let's just say that. And, you know, I wasn't ever encouraged to play sports or be athletic. And so throughout elementary school, junior high, and high school, I always carried extra weight. But by the time I was in high school, I was probably 30, 35 pounds heavier than I should have been. And junior year of high school, so 11th grade, I remember thinking, all right, prom is next year. I had the hots for a girl named Nakaya, and there was this high school football player in my science class. We were science partners, lab partners in science class. His name is Dave. He's in great shape, broad shoulders, small waist. And I was like, Dave, like, how do I look like you by next year? And he said, if you go into the gym with me, to the school gym, I'll show you. And so he taught me how to work out and exercise and kind of helped me restructure my diet. So the summer before senior year, I was just working out like a madman, eating as clean as I could, lost 35 pounds, came back senior year, completely transformed physically. What I was looking for is the physical transformation so that I could have confidence and be attractive to Nakaya to ask her to the prom. What I didn't realize I got was a whole level of confidence, self-esteem, self-worth. I was able to finally make eye contact with people. I remember students were like, dude, are you that guy who just walks around the campus during lunch? Because I had no friend group to belong to. And I was like, yeah, I'm that guy, yeah. And all of a sudden, like, I'm not invisible to them anymore. And so I realized this is the path I want to take. Like, I want to help more people with their health and fitness. Not just for the physical transformation, but for me, it was the, I didn't even realize I was depressed as a high school kid, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Until, it's almost like until you're out of it, you realize, holy smokes, like, I think I was in a funk for several years.
Yeah.
And so I never asked Nakaya to the prom. I never got the confidence to ask her to the prom. So I never went to the prom, but fitness transformed my life. And so that kind of led me to being a personal trainer, serving people through fitness. Ultimately, one of my personal training clients, Jim Franco, who became my first mentor, he's a great entrepreneur. He suggested that I open up my own personal training studio. That one thing led to another. You know, sometimes when you don't have your entrepreneurial confidence, someone who is an entrepreneur and who can believe in you, you can almost borrow their confidence. Like, let's say someone is genetically gifted and they don't realize that they could be a bodybuilder or an athlete. Well, when a great coach or an athlete sees them and goes, oh my gosh, you've got small joints and, you know, big muscle bellies and you might be a great athlete. I can. Yeah. And you ride their confidence. And so I rode Jim Franco's confidence and he really mentored me into being an entrepreneur, opened up my first personal training studio. By this time it's 2001, 2002. That led to opening up four more. That led to, you know, opening up, starting, ultimately selling those and starting Fit Body Bootcamp, this international fitness franchise now that we have with hundreds of locations worldwide. And my journey has just grown from there. Now I'm a serial entrepreneur. I love coaching and consulting people. And what I realized was as a health coach, fitness coach, putting people through a workout was fun, but seeing the mental, emotional transformation in them, I could have said, don't even pay me. I would do this for free. And so I realized I like coaching people mentally more than I like coaching them physically. And so I went into first business coaching, helping other gym owners turn their gyms into profitable gyms. Now I coach entrepreneurs of all walks of life. And what's really great is, you know, the businessman and the business plan as my friend Nick Long says, they're connected. So the businesswoman and the business plan are connected. And so I don't just focus on someone's business. I focus on their life structure, on their productivity, on their self-worth. And so I get to do some life coaching and business coaching at the same time and help them scale their businesses. And it's Cinderella story, right? Like I feel like every day is a gift for me. And so when the pandemic came, to me, it was just like just another challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know this about you. And I think that you and I share something in common. You mentioned offline. You know, before we got into this, you said, you know, you love this notion of like confident women. And my father and my parents weren't from Australia originally.
Yeah.
Yeah. My parents were born in Cyprus. And if you know anything about that country, the northern part is actually now occupied by Turkish invaders. So that was at the time when my father had to exit his house and it got taken over.
Yeah.
And so that's how we got to Australia. I wasn't born. I was evidently born in Australia, but I watched my parents work extremely hard, not knowing the language, working with, you know, their bare hands. That's how I always describe it. And that's how they made their wealth, and that's how they made their way. And my father always told me about the first time he bought a car. And I'm also the youngest of three, two boys. And so
we have parents, that in common.
Yeah, so they really brought me up very much, you know, strict and very hardworking. And, you know, they always, the things that they wanted from me and my two brothers were like above board, you know, like if this were the normal expectations, like their ours were here. And so I think I carry that into my life now. And now I'm also an immigrant into this country.
Right, right.
So I'm here by myself. Well, I came here in 2016 and I had to make my way. And so many people ask me now, they're like, how did you meet all of these people when you're not from this kind? It's like, well, it's just normal for me to just go through pain and to, you know, see what I need and then just reverse engineer it, then go through the pain to get there. Yeah. It's just very normal to me. Whereas I'm finding now, and you can probably talk about this more in terms of men, a lot of people like steer away from pain. And that journey that you were talking about with health and fitness, that's how I describe it as well. And I actually was, have you ever done a VO2 max test?
Many, many years ago. Yeah.
Someone asked me on a podcast actually yesterday, you know, how do we increase our VO2 max? And I said, you know, we spoke about it, but I was speaking about, and for everyone listening, the VO2 max is our measure of our peak respiratory fitness, cardiorespiratory fitness. It is not just the VO2 max measurement. It is the process of getting there. Because if you can put yourself through hard effort, maximal aerobic exercise for 30 minutes a week, 40 minutes a week, 50 minutes, that's the, you will raise your levels, but it's not about the number. Mm. It's about the journey that it takes to get there, both mentally and physiologically. Thank you, Inside Tracker, for sponsoring this episode of the show. We talk all the time about optimization, and you can do a whole bunch of things through diet, exercise, and proper sleep. But if you aren't measuring the impact that it has on your body, then you are missing out. Inside Tracker provides you with personalized plans to improve your metabolism, improve your sleep, optimize your health for the long haul. And most importantly, it analyzes your blood and your DNA. So you have to understand where your biomarkers are. For example, ApoB. This is an extremely important biomarker. It's linked to cardiovascular disease. You must know these numbers if you care about living, if you care about living well and living long. So Inside Tracker is an easy way to get these things done. And they also offer tools for professionals. I know that I have a lot of professionals listening to this. I know I've got a lot of coaches listening to this. Inside Tracker Pro is a no-cost platform that allows your clients to share their Inside Tracker analysis with you so that you can tailor their health protocols and training based on their results. Just go to insidetracker.com/Louisa. You can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just use code Louisa20 at checkout.
Yeah, you are not wrong. That's very true. And it's funny you say that about North Cyprus being invaded by the Turks. Our people have that in common as well, being Armenian. Armenia, there was the Armenian genocide in 1915 where the Turks killed millions of Armenians, and currently they are trying to make their way into southern Armenia, Karabakh. But anyway, I share that with you because it's typically there's clues that lead to success. You know, your parents being an immigrant, effectively you were an immigrant to Australia. And then
I definitely wasn't raised Australian.
Right. Exactly. Because your culture obviously is not Australian. And so you were raised very differently. And so I'm sure there was a culture clash for you there. And then in 2016, you come here.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a culture clash there as well. Yeah. Right. And many, many years ago, one of our videographers, this was actually 2009. So imagine the housing market had crashed. Unemployment is through the roof. Right. And I was just like making videos to start promoting Fit Body Bootcamp, the franchise. And I'm making these passionate videos, you know, talking about how it's a business model for gym owners who want to train one on many instead of one on one, because now that the economy has crashed, people can't afford $600 to $800 a month for one on one personal training, but they can afford $199 a month. And so group training is the way to go, blah, blah, blah. And at some point we took a little break in the filming, and he looked at me and goes, "You know what your thing is?" I go, "What's my thing?" He goes, "The economy's crashed, 12% unemployment rate, and you're passionately making videos that are going to sell this new up and coming franchise." He goes, "You've got this immigrant edge that I remember my grandpa telling me about." His grandpa had immigrated from Italy. And so I said, "What's that word?" He said, "This immigrant edge, this mindset immigrant has."
Yeah.
That no matter what, I'm going to make it. And as you're saying this, I was getting goosebumps, because I'm like, this woman's got the immigrant edge. Like, we can put you on Mars.
Yeah.
And you're going to figure it out.
100%.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
There is a magic to immigrants. And one of my life's goals is to pass that immigrant edge mindset, that these traits that we have, to people who have had the good fortune to be born here in a great country, and to see how much great opportunity we have, even when the chips are down, the economy sucks, the pandemic hits, you get fired, your spouse leaves you. Like, there's still no better place to be in terms of opportunity. Mm. And it's, if you look at it through the lens of the immigrant, you see those opportunities.
Yeah. And you're probably wondering, why on earth am I actually interviewing you? And on a medical and scientific podcast,
yeah,
why
I did wonder even, that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because I came across you. You know, we've got friends in common.
Sure.
And I came across some wonderful videos. You've got a great YouTube channel, by the way.
Thank you.
And I don't know when you started talking about the politics of health and fitness. When was that?
So up until then, up until January, even February of 2020, I had a podcast called The Empire Show, like how to build an empire, right? And The Empire Show was about interviewing entrepreneurs and learning how these entrepreneurs built their companies and organizations and lifestyles, and because I'm an entrepreneur at the core. And I figured if we can interview enough entrepreneurs, then people watching and listening to The Empire Show will kind of get the cheat code. You can avoid the mistakes they made and take advantage of the opportunities that they took. But then the pandemic hit, and I remember telling all my franchisees, we have them all in the private Facebook group, our Fit Body Bootcamp franchisees across the United States. It was March 16th, 2020. And I said, "Guys, you know, as far as we know, this is like a very horrible virus. I think we have a duty and an obligation to shut our locations for 2 weeks to flatten that curve." And that's the message that was being given at the time, right, by the government and by whatever, all professional healthcare people. But I'm also a paranoid former communist. And so I was like, what would my dad do? Mm. And so I turned to the CEO of my franchise, Bryce. I said, "Hey, Bryce, in case this pandemic goes on longer than 2 weeks and we can't open up our franchise doors," because our franchisees are all small business owners, right? Like, I own I'm the franchisor. They're the franchisee. Mm. And so they're small business owners. Yeah, some of our franchisees have 5, 10, 15 locations, and so they are considered big business owners. But, you know, a mom and pop that personal trainers that own a Fit Body Bootcamp, they're a small business owner in that community, and they're doing well for themselves. But if the doors are shut, soon the clients are going to go away after 2 weeks. And so I said, "Hey, Bryce, create some follow-along workouts that we can have in case this goes beyond 30 days. We'll just start doing workouts online via Zoom, create community. We'll need it." Like, part of me, just something was telling me, like, this might go longer and you're not hearing the entire truth from the government. And so, of course, 30 days go by, 35 days, 40 days, now 2 months. And I said, all right, guys, we're switching to online coaching. In the meantime, if you're in a free state like Florida, Texas, et cetera, feel free to open your doors and train your clients. Most states, however, we had to go online coaching. And that's when I decided to just, I saw the writing on the wall, and I would talk to my dad during that time. And he's like, this is part of the Communist Manifesto, son. And when he told me that, I was like, well, Dad, tell me more. And as he did, I would just go to Instagram and start like, look, this is wrong. And here's why. And where's the evidence? And where's the proof? And where did this virus come from? And we can't just say, you know, a pig and a bat farted and all of a sudden there's this virus. Like, there's got to be some, we've got to have accountability here. Like, what if this happens again? What do we do? How's humanity affected? Who's caring about these small businesses? And so I caused such a stink on social media that Fox News, to their credit, 4 or 5 times asked me to come on their show and speak on behalf of small business owners during this pandemic, right? So now we're like 4, 5, 6 months into the pandemic. During that whole time, I'm feeling this like, I don't know how else to say it. I don't necessarily believe in like there's a God. I do believe there's a creator or a universal consciousness. That's my faith, my belief system. But I believe like the creator was speaking to me, and like I felt this gnawing in my gut, like, dude, you got to create a new show. So I stopped doing the Empire show at the time because no guests are flying in to be here in our studio. So I stopped doing the Empire show. I'm focused on making sure Fit Body Bootcamp survives. I'm worried about what's happening in this world and that people are asleep at the steering wheel. And I feel this gnawing in my gut, like, you got to start a YouTube show and just openly talk about everything. But at the same time, I'm like, oh man, this could negatively impact my business. But I'm like, damn your business. What would your dad say, right? Well, damn your business. Like, this country and your kids and their kids and their kids, like, what opportunity will they lose if we let this free country go to waste? So reluctantly, I had Joan, my assistant. I said, Joan, I think I'm going to create a show called The Bedros Koulian Show. No interview, just me looking down the barrel of a camera, and that's the podcast and YouTube show. And I'm going to speak from Radiance, from Source. And I did, and that was, by this point, we're talking now like September, October, and like I felt the need for it, and I started the show. By this point, it's 2021, and it just took off. Like, people were hungry for a message that was, like, we all felt what I was saying. I wasn't saying anything profound. I was saying what everybody felt.
Yeah.
And that is constantly what I saw in the comments, in my DMs, like, holy hell, I can tell something's not right. I can tell we're being lied to. I can tell there's manipulation. I can tell that, like, this is an attack on small businesses. You're speaking the truth against the big pharmaceutical companies, against big government, both sides, by the way, left and right. You know, they're both on the take as far as I'm concerned. And so one episode after another just kept taking off and kept taking off. And I realized that we can't look to daddy government for the health of our future, our kids' future, like mental health, physical health, financial health, sovereignty, freedom. It's on you. Doesn't matter if Trump or Biden becomes president, the person that has the greatest impact on your future is you, not the president. Yet, what does everybody do? We go external locus of control, right?
Yeah.
You know, if the economy was great and if she wasn't so mean to me and if the president was so-and-so and not so-and-so, everything would be fine. Well, okay, well, guess what? If she's mean to you and the economy's shitty and he's the president, what can you do?
Exactly.
So my whole thing was, and so really the show was all about money, meaning, and self-mastery. If you can focus on making your money, have a sense of purpose or meaning, because I saw how people were falling into a massive state of depression, anxiety because of the pandemic, because of the separation. Like, we can't go out, we can't work out, we can't go to the beach here in California, right? And then, of course, self-mastery. Like, become the best version of yourself. Like, the greatest FU to the man is when you become the highest version of yourself. And so the show is all about money, meaning, and self-mastery. And it took off. And here we are now. We just put out episode 82. So whatever, 82 weeks in. But I share that because I reluctantly put that out because I feel like my zone of genius is business and entrepreneurship. But I also felt like I had a duty and an obligation to speak what everyone's feeling. And I was financially in a place where no one can stop me. And I did lose some franchisees. Some came out and said, hey, you're a danger to society, telling people to go and work out at the beach and to be active and to you know, like, this is just a cold or a flu. It's not. And whatever. So I did lose some people, but I knew that more than anyone, I was in a position to speak what everybody was feeling. And I'm glad I did. Like, looking back, I think my kids will go, like, I'm proud of my dad.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody now is realizing that that was the truth. But in extension of what you said, and I quote, you said quite recently, the opposition wants you sick, fat, and broke.
Yeah.
And they are funded by the industrial, military complex, military, big pharma, food conglomerates.
Yep.
Exactly. And their voice is through mainstream media.
Exactly. Mainstream media, both sides, CNN, Fox, it doesn't matter. They are literally the megaphone of the opposition who is funded by those three or four big conglomerates, right? The food industry, the military industrial complex. Like, we have to have wars. If we don't, how are these big mega corporations going to continue on? But at what cost?
Well, you know, I think the healthcare industry is the largest growing industry in America.
Yeah.
And what is the most profitable business right now? It is illness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do believe in some sense that, you know, free speech and the podcast and your YouTube channel is now educating people on getting out of the, you know, the sickness. You know, we're brought up in this world where we believe that you have a statin deficiency. You know, you need to get a statin if your LDL is this, you know, don't work out. We're not going to prescribe you exercise. We're not going to prescribe you good nutrition. You have a statin deficiency, we'll give you statin.
Yeah.
And it is, it's scary. But, you know, in my everyday life, I'm surrounded by physicians and scientists. So to me, it's very illogical to think that way. But unfortunately, not everybody thinks this way. You know, almost every day my mother sends me something that she's seen on YouTube. She's like, should I take this supplement?
Oh, no.
You know, I'm like, just stop looking at YouTube. So I can understand that a lot of the population is sick, fat, and broke.
Right.
And they're buying into this healthcare system that they believe and deem to be there for them. We believe you. I want to believe you. And it's just, it's scary.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're very confident. You're well-spoken. Seems like you financially do well for yourself and you're fit. You are hardest to control, young lady. You are. You are hardest to control. You would be hardest to get control and compliance over.
That's what the men say.
Ha!
Ha! I had to throw that in there. I've heard that one too many times.
Yeah, seriously. Men who lack confidence and who are insecure will be intimidated by you.
Yeah.
And when we talk about the opposition wanting to keep you sick, fat, and broke, well, we always have to ask why. You're easier to control that way. If you're broke, you don't have a lot of options.
Mm.
You have the option, like, you can leave New York and come to California. You can leave California and go to Texas. You can, like, you have these options. You're connected. Your business is structured in a way that you can be anywhere. Money gives us choices and options.
Mm.
So if you're broke, you now look to daddy government. What do I do? Right? If you're sick, you're not in the best state of mind to make decisions.
Mm.
You know, looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you're sick, you're trying to figure out, how can I live another day?
Yeah.
Even if it's on statins, even if it's on medications and you know, insulin and all this, like, you're not trying to think of your higher self. How do I become a better human? How do I serve humanity? How do I connect to consciousness? Right? So they want you sick, broke, and dependent. You are just easier to control that way. Like, you are their greatest enemy.
Mm.
Like, both in how you are and then the message you put out there for empowering others.
Mm.
Because the moment you begin to empower others through your voice, you begin to replicate others to become like you, they become harder to control. And the opposition doesn't want that.
Why is it that control is at the center of this, though?
Money and power. Money and power.
Really?
Yeah. Money and power. Yesterday, with a few friends, I went to a restaurant in Irvine. I'd never been to this restaurant, and there was about 30 people of Indian descent at the restaurant, occupying two huge tables. And I think it's maybe in their culture where all the women sit at one table and all the men were sitting at another table.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell it was one of the men's birthday parties. And these are people like late 50s to early 70s. So we're not talking spring chicken here, right? These are grown people, very mature people. But the women were at one table, the men were at another table. And the culture is, you know, it's a culture that very carries themselves very respectfully. They're an age group that they're not going to be, you know, shooting back tequila and smashing bottles. Like, they are mature in age. Yet I look at the table with the men, because we're sitting at a booth just outside of their view. And I look at the men and they're just being rambunctious. They're still boys. They're just gray-haired old boys, right? And you can, you know, they're kind of pushing each other and picking on each other.
Yeah.
And I look at the women and they're just holding and a great conversation. You can tell there's like meaningful dialogue happening. But us men, we're competitive. Mm. And it's by design. We need to be. We want to push the boundaries. We want to take risks. Whatever we have is not enough. I want to get a little bit more. Mm. You know, one day somebody asked me, they stumped me. They said, Bedros, we saw that you're on Inc. 5000 and then you hit the Inc. 500. Your Entrepreneur Magazine's 200 fastest growing franchises. You're making a lot of money. We see you everywhere. When's enough enough? And he stumped me. I was like, shoot, I don't know. And I felt like, I guess I just want to keep acquiring, right? Mm. And then of course, 2 days later, I saw Ed Mylett and Ed and I were talking. And I go, Ed, this guy stumped me. I was at Starbucks. He recognized me. And I don't think he was being mean. He was just like, so when's enough enough? Mm. You know, like, what are your goals? And I realized I just want to keep doing.
Yeah.
And Ed said, well, I know you well enough to know that you contribute to Shriners Children's Hospital every Christmas. You buy thousands of dollars of toys for tots. You have kids adopted through Compassion International. Like, he goes, how many more surgeries can you donate to through Shriners? How many more toys can you buy? How many more kids can you adopt? He goes, it's never enough. How many more vacations can you take your family on? Experiences can you give? He goes, it's never enough. Mm. That's your answer, Bedros. I was like, shoot. But I felt in that moment that, so men, all this to tell you that men, we want to erect a statue to ourselves. We're just weird like that. But absolute power is absolute corruption. Like, absolute power is absolutely corrupt. And so we have to be able to control our ego. We have to be able to control our greed glands. Now, I know there are no such thing as greed glands, but I do believe that men more than women have greed glands because we're competitive. We want to take risks. I want a better journal than you, and I want a better pen than you, and I want a better car than you. And that's just how in our way. And so why does this thing happen? Because money and power. And, you know, why does every congressperson who's supposed to get paid $172,000 a year all of a sudden end up picking the right stocks and coming out of Congress or the Senate as millionaires? They pick, their stock picks are better than Warren Buffett's? Come on.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously they have access to insider information, do they not?
Yeah, well, of course.
You know, we've seen that happen with Pelosi.
Yes,
of course. She was on trial.
It just reminded me, this year in January, JP Morgan held their annual health conference. And I won't go into specifics, but one man did get up and he was outlining to the investors, you know, projected revenue. And he spoke about the projected revenue of Alzheimer's disease. Now, that is my area of research. That's what I'm advocating for. I'm passionate about it. I'm researching, I'm publishing, I'm in the weeds, I'm brain scanning. I'm in that area. And so it's very, you know, it's very emotional for me. And he got on stage and he said, we're very excited this year because Alzheimer's disease, now I don't know if you know the statistics, 55 million people worldwide currently have the disease. That number is said to triple by the year 2050. And arguably, if you look at the research, I would say around 80%. I usually say 97%, but I've gotten in trouble for that. So I'll say 80 to 90% of all Alzheimer's disease cases are preventable, more than that, right? And so they're banking on us getting sick and they're banking on us profiting. You know, they want to profit off our illness. And they mentioned that the Alzheimer's disease medications, which actually there are no medications to prevent or reverse this disease. Well, let's just put it out there. There's two, you know, FDA approved drugs, which are not really doing anything. The best form of prevention is lifestyle factors, exercise, right, nutrition, sunlight, low stress levels. But they're saying it's going to be a $25 billion industry. So they're banking, they're basically revving their investors up. And if Big Pharma is then telling the government and the CDC what to tell us, it becomes apparent. I don't know if you know this, but they've actually cut PE budgets, physical education budgets in schools. So now kids are getting less physical education when we know that exercise is at the forefront of Alzheimer's disease prevention. So now they're starting younger. And guess what we've seen this year? The first ever Alzheimer's disease patient in the teens.
Oh, Lord.
A dementia. I shouldn't say that. A first ever dementia patient. And we're seeing type 2 diabetes in kids. And that's driven by the CDC guidelines.
I hope you know how close this is hitting for me. I don't know how much research you did, but this past September, my mom died of Alzheimer's. And
oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Being in the fitness industry and personal training industry, well, I got certified 30 years ago as a personal trainer, and you could imagine our cultures are pretty similar. My parents didn't exercise a lot. They ate a lot of fried food and high-fat food. And while I didn't know any of this stuff, I'm pretty self-aware and instinctive. And I was like, Mom, Dad, if you guys just exercised, you guys will have a longer life than Grandma did, because my grandma died of Alzheimer's as well. And it was, you know, you fast forward 30 years and my mom died several months ago of Alzheimer's. And I was right by her bedside seeing her take her last breath. And anyone who doesn't know, who's listening to this, like, what a horrible way to die. It's asphyxiation. Like your brain, the parts of your brain, from what I understand, I'm sure you can correct me if I'm wrong, the parts of your brain that control your breathing die, and they choke to death, right? And I'm holding my mom's hand and I'm rubbing her forehead and I'm thinking, like, I had 30 years to do something about this, but they have to be a willing participant in it. Sorry, I'm getting emotional about it. And it's because now I hear you say that they're cutting physical education in schools, yet you got these guys revving their shareholders, getting them excited about what a big run it's going to be on creating medication for Alzheimer's, but then they're prepping the future patients by cutting PE. Like, this is the opposition.
Yes. They're doing preparing their work. You to be on a statin and to get these drugs. And the one thing that I make apparent to everybody out of all of the, you know, the diseases, you've got cardiovascular disease, you've got cancer, Alzheimer's disease is the only one where you lose who you are. You look at your son or your daughter or yourself, and I've seen it in person, somebody say, well, who am I?
Yeah.
And so you lose who you are, and we are, you know, you go to sleep with your thoughts. You go to sleep with knowing who you are, and you wake up knowing who you are, and it's the only thing that you can hold sacred to yourself. Without money, without anything. And that is robbed of you.
Yeah.
And you're at the mercy of these big conglomerates that are telling you, oh, you don't need to exercise that much. In fact, the CDC guidelines for physical activity state that you need to be doing 150 minutes at minimum to 300 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity. Only around 25%, I would say probably smaller than that, are actually meeting those guidelines.
Right. And no one's teaching them at school anymore what that even looks like. I mean, you walk into any gym USA and people are just going through the motions. You just don't see that. And you look at the food pyramid, what they're recommending, and it's, again, such highly processed, high sugar, refined sugar foods.
Yeah.
From what I understand, I think it was might have been Dr. Gabrielle that told me that some are saying that diabetes or type 3 diabetes – they're calling dementia
Alzheimer's. The top three diabetes.
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, okay, so let's cut physical activity.
Yes.
Let's shove processed refined sugar in their pie hole for these kids.
Yeah.
And then produce the problem that we're trying to solve in the future.
Yeah. And then there's this whole stigma of if you're trying to look good, you know, I see this as well. Like, you know, if you're trying to look good, they also put that as a, you know, oh, you're egotistical.
Right.
And so it's a war against you wanting to, it's not even about living to 100. It is just, how can I live the last decade of my life not in a bed?
Yeah.
Do you mind me asking a question about your mother?
No, please do. You caught me off guard there.
Because
just when I think I've like, okay, I'm over it.
Yeah.
Like, I'll hear something like that and I just want to gush and cry. But
was it actually Alzheimer's disease or was it Parkinson's dementia? Was it?
It was actually Alzheimer's from what I understand. And I was with her at every doctor visit, at every MRI where they showed the brain scan and just the dark spots where her brain was dying.
Yeah.
And they had her on medication, but I'm going to be honest with you. It showed nothing.
Yeah. These IV meds that are approved, they take over a year to even actually go in and clear out the amyloid. But by that time, more amyloid is actually building. The reason why I ask is because it's important in that sense to look between, there is genetic mutations and then there's genetic risk factors. And that's, you know, if you've got the genetic mutations, so far there's three, maybe she didn't have those, you're definitely 100% going to get some form of dementia. But then there's the genetic risk factors. And I don't know if you've been tested for them.
Like, no. And I think that was a conversation Gabrielle and I had.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I should be tested for, because my grandma died of it. My mom died of it. My dad is turning 90 in 2 weeks, and I mean, he's sharp as a tack.
Wow.
So I'm hoping I got more of his. Yeah,
maybe you got some of the good alloys. Yeah.
But I can tell you, my mom ate so much, just like she would make the most sugary, sweet, processed, flour-based foods. God bless her. Just such a great human. And the food she made was amazing. But like, she was complicit in her death. There's no other way to say this. My mom was complicit in her death through lack of activity and through the poor diet. And I knew early on enough as a certified trainer, and I did my own research, where I didn't know that that's what she was going to die of, but I knew that whatever was waiting in the future, I could help put that off longer and possibly prevent it if they would just do some basics. I wasn't asking them to come to the gym and like, you know, do squats and deadlifts and benches. I was like, guys, let's just walk at a higher speed and get our heart rate up. And it went from 4 days a week to 3 days a week. She, like, it, within 2 weeks, it went from 4 days a week to like 1 day a week, and then she stopped. And then I bought her a treadmill because she didn't want to go outside. And like, you know, I don't need to tell you. Like, everything had an excuse until she was dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no, that's the sad thing, is because it starts with mild cognitive impairment, and we won't go into it, but prevention really is the best thing.
Yeah.
We'll shift gears now. And I want to talk about you. You train and coach men.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you if, you know, if you think that this whole issue that we're having in the world, you know, we've got this quote unquote testosterone deficiency epidemic, where it's clinically classified as 300 nanograms per deciliter or less. And we're seeing more and more men with low sperm count and more men with low testosterone. We know that testosterone isn't just a hormone of libido responsible just for your erection. It's more so that hormone that is like self-confidence. It really is. And vigilance. And it's that one that pushes you to keep going. You mentioned at the start, you said something about men just want to keep pursuing and they want to fight against each other. That is primarily and evolutionarily why testosterone. Yeah. I'm very excited to announce that the Neuro Experience podcast is now proudly partnered with Hone Health. When was the last time you had your testosterone levels checked? Hone is the modern men's health platform that offers personalized care with data-driven insights, along with licensed physician consultations and medications, all from home. The best part is Hone men typically see their hormone levels double and report low energy and mood improvement by 33% over 6 months. Guys, Hone is doing everything they can to not only thoroughly test hormone levels in men, but optimize from there in the best way possible. So if you want to get your testosterone levels checked, you can save $15 on your test when you click the link below, or you can go to honehealth.com/neuro to save $15 off on your at-home hormonal testing kit.
And we need that, by the way. Like,
oh, of course.
Yeah, everyone says, well, now we live in a sophisticated time. We don't need that part of masculinity anymore. The hell we don't. If the moment we get invaded, no one's calling a woke purple haired dude to come and put out a fire or to help with a crime. You're calling a SWAT team, or you're calling in the military, who are absolute meat eaters who are going to annihilate the enemy. You look at the towers, the bridges, the roads, the highways, the sewage systems, the electrical lines. Jordan Peterson like fell apart crying. There's a video of him that went viral where he said, like, it's men who are in the sewers covered with rats trying to get your shit to go to the shit processing center from your toilet to there. Like, it is men who do that. And it takes a high level of testosterone, of wanting to take risks, of doing, wanting to do, I'm willing to do the jobs that no one else is. And I know, as someone who's on TRT right now, because at 49 years old, when I felt, I'm 49 now, when I felt about 10 years ago that something's not right, I went to the doctor and they did a blood panel, and my doctor laughingly said, you've got the testosterone levels of the average housewife. And I was like, well, that might explain why I go to the gym and I have no desire to go inside and work out. And you're talking to a guy who like is a fitness guy.
Yeah.
And I would chalk it up to, well, I'm stressed. I'm starting Fit Body Boot Camp. I'm stressed. Or I haven't slept well. Well, I wasn't sleeping well either because of lack of testosterone. Then I was foggy headed. And quite honestly, I was like in a funk and in a semi-depression. And why it's got such a bad stigma, I don't know. But I do know that a healthy amount managed by a doctor, like Gabrielle looks after me. And, you know, every 90 days I'm going through a blood panel. Testosterone plays a very important role to the point now where one of my coaching clients, Dr. Doug Lucas, is now kind of leading the charge on hormone and testosterone for women, like low dose testosterone for women.
Well, women actually have four times as much testosterone than they do estrogen. It's funny, right? It's like, why do we demonize testosterone in men? It's apparent, you know, we need it for healthy breast tissue, everything, fertility. So I don't know why it's demonized as well. But the reason why I brought that up is because do you think that that is feeding in? So, you know, you've got what the CDC and the government tells you, we're loading up on sugar, lack of sleep, lack of physical activity, which then lowers the hormone levels, which then interfere with self-confidence. It disrupts fertility. It makes men, and we'll focus just on men because that's who you coach, and it makes them not feel good. And then that then has a flow on flow effect with everything else.
Absolutely. And again, if you don't feel good, you're not going to be ambitious and driven to go and earn and produce. If you don't feel good and motivated, you're not going to feel ambitious and driven to go change your physiology, your physique, right? Mm. If you don't feel good, you're not going to go and try and go find yourself a mate. You're just, if you don't feel good, you lose hope.
Yes.
And if you don't have hope, you don't have any desire to go and achieve and accomplish, which goes back to if you don't feel good, you stay sick and dumb and broke and dependent, which is exactly how the opposition wants you.
Yeah, you're back into the system.
It's a perfect circle.
So what do you see amongst the men that you currently coach mainly? Like what's the number one problem that they're having?
The number one problem they're having is they feel like, very similar to my podcast, I said, I didn't say anything groundbreaking on the BK show that really blew up. I just said what everybody was thinking. And I feel like, I was like, to hell with it. I'd rather, if I don't say it and we lose our freedoms and I'm at fault if this constitution gets eroded and ultimately we lose our freedoms and my son and daughter live in a country much more similar to the Soviet Union than the United States. But these men, very much like that, feel like, well, I want to earn, I want to be competitive, but like my wife and her friends like always poo-poo on the fact that I want to go do like guy stuff. Like they've been so brainwashed. Society has been so brainwashed that humanity has been sold that the natural instincts of men, which is to earn, which is to be competitive, which is to be curious, which is to want to build muscle, which is want to make more money, have a bigger house, figure out what's around the bend. Like, why did he put a Tesla in a rocket and shoot it off to Mars, right? To the point where he and his wife divorced because he said, I want to die on Mars. Like, I want to find a way to go to Mars, live there, and I'm going to die there. She's like, well, I'm not interested in that, dude. So they divorced. Like, there's a dude who's like, huh, I wonder what's up there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's a lot of women who care about that. And maybe rightfully so. Thank God all women don't, because if women and men wanted to know what's around the corner, we'd be extinct.
Yeah.
So we do also need women to go, hey, nut job, slow down, right? Slow down. Yeah.
Don't get too excited.
Right, don't get too excited. But all those things that are factory installed in men, and that's what the message I want to say is it's factory installed in men. Like no one tells a little girl like, no, don't hold that little doll or that little kitty and nurturing it. Yet a little boy who like takes a G.I. Joe and like pulls its arms and legs apart and it just blew up, mom. Oh my God, you dismembered something. You might grow up to be a killer, Bobby. Don't do that. It's in his instincts to visualize that and his imagination takes him there. But we don't stop a little girl from nurturing a little doll, but we stop a little boy from, like me and all my friends, we blew up literally with firecrackers, blew up G.I. Joe's little action figures because that's what boys do. We're curious of what happens if I take He-Man's arms and I put it on G.I. Joe's body, right? Like that is a curiosity factor. The things that are factory installed in men have become afraid to do what is factory installed for them. And so as a byproduct of that, they feel like their fire is put out. that they don't have a voice, that they can't go and with pride say, I want to dominate this and I want to conquer that and I want to achieve this. Because if you do, like, whoa, slow down, man. Like, you're toxic. Mm. You're being very toxic. Mm. And it's sad. And so I tell men it's okay to do that. And in fact, I brought, the only other person I brought up on my show in 82 episodes, Father Michael Butler. He's an amazing priest. His parish is in Michigan, 62 years old and jacked. And he said, it is your godly duty as a man to be that way, to be masculine. It's your gift from God to be masculine. And I said, why? He said, how else are you going to teach your son what is factory installed in him? Mm. We didn't come with the owner's manual. Mm. I was like, holy hell, you're right, dude.
Yeah. Well, then what's your take then on feminism?
I want to say maybe the intentions when created were good, right? Like, we want equality, we want this, we want that. However, we can't have equality. It just simply isn't equality. Like, you are far more intuitive than I am. That's, women just have better intuition. You just do. As much as I want to be as connected to my kids, especially when they were babies, I'm super connected with them now because they take interest in their dad who's jacked and who's like fun and their friends listen to my show. But when they were babies, I remember, like, as soon as they would cry, I would hand them over to mom. I would try and do everything. The little fuckers wouldn't shut up. As soon as I hand them over to mom, just something about the mom's energy. I want equality.
Yeah.
I want that. I just simply couldn't. I want to know what it feels like to literally bear a child in your body and then feed it from your body. Like, that must feel amazing. I can't. We're not equal, right? And if there's a giant bang right now, I don't expect you to run out that door to see what's going on. I will do that. And I've got a pistol with me that will make sure that if there's a bad guy there, he's taken care of. Mm. Like, we have our roles, and it's such a beautiful symbiotic dance that happens. And so feminism has absolutely poisoned the well that we drink from. It's confused men. It's confused women. Women low key. Like, every time we have a project, this event is a 75-hour experience for men to go through this awesome, grueling, physically, mentally, and emotionally grueling experience, led by me, a Navy SEAL, a Marine, and a combatives expert. And we just literally, like, pour into these men and help them overcome their limiting beliefs and let them know that it's okay to be a man. And here's what a toxic, by the way, the most toxic men are passive aggressive men. They're the most dangerous men because you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to get with the toxic man, with the passive aggressive man who won't speak his mind, won't ask for what he wants until he's finally fed up and he'll punch the wall and put his hand through a wall. And his wife's like, oh my God, I've got a crazy man on my hands.
You mean someone who doesn't know how to just communicate simply?
Yeah, because a masculine man will be like, I'm not going to put, like, he's going to have emotional discipline.
Yeah.
He's going to say, I'm not going to put my hand through that wall. Instead, hey, honey, do you think that maybe when I'm on the Zoom, can you keep the radio down or can you not have the vacuum go or whatever the fucking thing is, right? But instead, these dudes don't know how to ask what they want because they've been declawed and defanged. It's no different than if you look at the lion in the Serengeti. He may have a shorter lifespan, but he does what a lion's supposed to do. He growls, he hunts, he stalks, he kills, he eats. That's a happy lion. You look at any lion in a zoo that's behind the plexiglass, they're just dead-eyed. Yes, they're going to live longer than the one that's out in nature. But three times a day, they throw a piece of raw meat in front of him, and he's not doing what he's supposed to do. He's not using his instincts, his claws. He's not hunting. He's not stalking. Just eats that piece of meat and lays there and sadly looks at the people who are snapping pictures of them with their shitty little phones. And so feminism has absolutely poisoned the well that we all drink from. And I know this because when we run the project and the men who graduate it, it's all these women who slide into my DMs and go, because, you know, I share as the 75 hours is happening straight, we're sharing what's going on. And these women are sliding into my DMs like, wow, are any of these men single? Wow. Look at them go. They're gritty. They're grunting. They're pulling. They're pushing. They're fighting with pugil sticks. Wow, they're boxing. Like, Women are attracted to that. They're not attracted to the guy who wears clam digger pants and you know, a little vest, and not anything wrong with that. But actually, there is a lot wrong with that. You get the point I'm making, yeah. Right?
No. The reason why I bring it up is I was
we're uncivilized. We're supposed to be uncivilized to a degree.
Yeah.
And they're trying to civilize us.
Yeah.
And I'm fighting against it.
I share the same. I'm very much in the same bandwagon. I was on a really big podcast, and he brought this up, and he said, "You evidently support." I said, "No." And he said, "But because I see you, you know, my job, 98% of all of my clients are men. I go into hedge funds as well, and I'm around men a lot. So people see me as this, I don't know, maybe a strong, but I separate that from who I really am. And sure. It's, I do believe in gender roles. I said, but what you're doing now, if you're arguing for equal pay, it's like, but when you want to take time off to have your kids, what do you want? You don't want your husband, and arguably if you are in a heterosexual relationship, you don't want your husband to earn more money to help you with that. It's just very much, I don't,
right.
I get it too. So yeah. We put up with it as well.
Yeah. And yet we want equality, but you know, you go on a date to a restaurant, you kind of expect him to pay. Well,
yes.
Pay up.
Yes.
Right? But I would feel weird if I were single and I went on a date. I would feel weird if this woman was like, "I insist on paying." It's like, that you're literally taking my masculinity away.
Yeah.
Like, please allow me to open the door for you. Allow me to be chivalrous. Allow me to pay the bill. And there's things like, if this relationship blossoms into a marriage, and inevitably I'm going to have a hard day and I can't show sadness and vulnerability to the rest of the world. Yeah. I want to come to you and you show me with your tender heart and wrap your arms around me and give me a safe place to just fucking vent for a few minutes.
Yeah, I don't know why. I've actually never openly said this on a podcast. I don't know how everyone's going to take it, but I would be absolutely disgusted if I went on a date and a man didn't pay for me.
Right.
I wouldn't know what to do. It's actually happened once. He actually said, "Would you like to split the bill?" He asked me. I thought, I didn't know what to do.
My daughter's 16. Chloe is 16 years old, and I've since 7 years old, I've gone on daddy-daughter dates with her. In the beginning, it was once a week. Now, with her busy schedule of flag football and volleyball and her friend group, we go once a month. And I've brainwashed her into, like, if a boy or a man asks you to split the bill, or like, you just take an Uber home, you call me, like, it's like there's no second date. In fact, the little boy that she has as a friend, shout out to Nolan if he's listening to this. Nolan always seems to find any podcast that I'm on. He's a great kid. When she started dating Nolan, she's in 10th grade, she's like, "Hey, you got to work out with my dad. You got to go to my dad's gym and work out with him. You're going to do this thing called Ride the Lightning." It's a little program that I created. Workout program. And Nolan threw up all over himself and cleaned it up and fed him some goo, and he was fine. And we took a picture as evidence of life and sent it to Chloe. Well, I first took the picture of him on the ground vomiting and sent it to Chloe. She's like, "Dad." And then I sent the picture of him back alive. And like, Nolan came and did that workout. But Chloe's like, "Look, I want a dude who can like fend for me and who can fight for me and who can be chivalrous. But Chloe can also like make you a hell of a chocolate chip cookie and a cake and cook for..." Right? But but the gender roles, like, she believes in that. And good for you for being disgusted by that. And I think more women feel the way you do.
But they don't say it.
Exactly. Feminism has backfired on them. And they're like, "Fuck, she just said what I feel. But if I say it, then I can't demand equality."
But it comes back to, and I read this, and we're veering off track, but I read this somewhere, and it says a man is paying, actually, you're paying for my time, because women do have a clock. If that's what you're going on a date for, I don't know everyone goes on dates, but if you're going on a date to potentially be a mate, well, this is my time that you're taking away from me. You can have children until you're 90 probably and beyond.
Right.
So you're taking my time away from me. So the least you could do is pay for that.
I think that's a fair statement.
Okay. So I want to just now wrap up with some of the things that you think everyone now in 2024, men and women, should be looking out for when it comes to health and fitness, so they're not at the mercy of these huge conglomerates?
That's a really good question. I think that's the question of the century. And to me, it's very simple. More than ever, information is no longer guarded by the system and the opposition. They're still putting it out, and they're using mainstream media as their voice of, like, the CDC says, this is what you... So, if, you know, someone's watching CNN and Fox News, they're going to hear what the opposition wants them to do in terms of activity, in terms of food, in terms of et cetera. But what they ought to do is they ought to find voices like you, voices like Gabrielle's, voices like Thomas DeBlauer, and many others, me, and go, oh, you know what? Information on longevity and prevention of disease is freely available. And they have to become a willing participant. Like, you have to become your own doctor.
You
have to become self-aware. You can't then go and outsource your health to someone else who is being indoctrinated. The pharmaceutical companies create the education that the doctors get at medical school. Like, what a perfect way to keep the pharmaceutical companies
and the biggest ones, Stanford, Harvard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Who don't learn anything about root cause, mitochondrial health.
Nothing.
And nowhere is exercise a vital sign or being prescribed.
Yeah. I think the time that we live in, 2024, you can find the best information for free, for free from experts who are willing to put it out at no gain to them other than the fact that, like, we want to see humanity grow. Because, look, I make my money through ads and you make your money through ads and probably from sponsorships and through other businesses that you have. So the content I'm putting out is free. Like, the fact that I think everyone should be sovereign, you should question government, you should question Republicans, you should question Democrats, you should be suspect of them. Ronald Reagan said it best, trust but verify. Hey, I trust you have the best intentions for me, but let me verify this. Like, you know, you just want to put me on statins, doc. Do you want to ask me about my quality of life, about my activity, about my stress levels? Am I getting sunlight? Am I drinking spring water to keep my telomeres longer? Am I drinking tap water that's chlorinated and God knows has what in it? What am I eating? And what is my sleep patterns like? You're not asking any of that, doc. I'm not sure if you have my best interest at heart, but I'm also not sure if you probably can't ask this, because if you do, you might lose your medical license.
Yes.
And so I have to take it in my own hands, and the information is free. And people go, but I don't have the time. Sure you do. Stop binge watching all that shit on Amazon Prime and Netflix and Hulu, and make time to do a little Google and YouTube research. And then you're going to find experts like you and others who you can learn, you know, how, like, alcohol. Now, finally, in 2024, everyone's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't drink.
It's bad. Yeah.
Like, really? It took till now? Like, come on. Come on. Like, the reason you feel the way you do is because you're literally poisoning your body, and your body's fighting tooth and nail to go back to equilibrium. And in the process, you're like, I don't care about anything right now. I'm de-stressed. Yeah, but you wake up the next day feeling horrible, getting shitty sleep. And so the information's out there. And if people aren't taking advantage of that, they are not an active participant in serving themselves, which sadly, I also say good, because more spoils for us.
Do you want to know what I think the most underrated hack is?
What's that?
That I've recently come across. Health hack, longevity hack.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
The people that you spend your time with. And I'm not even talking about the people that you constantly spend your time with. If you understand the brain, right? We've got these functional networks. We've got the prefrontal cortex that is housing our executive functions, how we think, how we, but then we've got this other network, and it's the default mode network, which literally gets wired via information. The brain is dumb. It's just there. And so it gets wired via information. We call it neuroplasticity. So if I feed you information of anything, if I tell you constantly, I am a unicorn, and I keep telling you every single day, you're going to start seeing me as a unicorn,
sure,
right? Yeah. So it just feeds it information, just like food is information. It's not food. So if I constantly am talking to a certain individual every day, was apparent to me. I have one girlfriend who I've had to, like, you know, kind of cut back on because she's so negative, because she's in the worst relationship, and every day I was like, oh my God, I feel every time I got off the phone to her, I'm like stressed. Nice. And I thought, so I started thinking about it. I was like, oh, she's rewiring my brain, because I started to become negative against things, you know, relationship wise. I thought, oh my gosh, this is not me. And so you don't realize unconsciously that your brain is getting shaped by the people that you hang out with and by social media, the people who you follow. So I think that's the biggest health hack, because if you keep following somebody that's feeding you certain information, you think you have control on it. You don't. Your brain is getting wired.
Yeah.
And then your brain gives you the information, and then you act out in that behavior.
Right.
It's actually just science.
If there was any vital part of this show, it's what you just said. It's so vital. And I'll tell you why. 14 years ago, Dan Sullivan, sitting in Joe Polish's mastermind. Doesn't matter who Joe Polish is. He's a great human being and awesome, like connected to everybody. But he had a mastermind. I was a member in it. I scraped together like credit cards to go into that mastermind. And there was this old curmudgeon-y man named Dan Sullivan sitting there. And Dan Sullivan owns a company called Strategic Coach. And Dan was asked by Joe Polish, hey, can you get up and do a 10-minute talk? And Dan Sullivan gets up and he literally says, the two biggest determining factors of your success in terms of financial, relational, and health are the thoughts that occupy your mind and the people that you surround yourself with. And you just repeated that again 14 years later. And I'm not a smart guy. My IQ is like probably average at best. And it takes me reps and reps and reps to get something. But I've always been told something by the people who have mentored me. They said that you're very coachable. You just go out and execute. You just go out and execute better than anyone else. I don't start having those. They say go make 100 phone calls and cold call these people. And they give me the script. I don't go, well, I wonder if I'll get rejected. Mm. How will I feel if I get rejected? I just go do it if my coach has said so. Dan Sullivan said it. So I just started curating the thoughts that occupy my mind and the people I surround myself with. 14 years later, you, with research-backed information, are saying this. Basically, your network and then the other way you said the information that occupies your mind, you said social media, basically any form of media. Mm. It's thoughts being fed into your head and then we act upon it. Like that is powerful. And people leave their notifications on and they will be literally at a date or a dinner with their spouse and you see their phone light up and then they'll immediately go to that. And it's like,
yeah.
Someone's random post is more valuable than the person that you're spending your life with. Like, what the hell is the matter with you? And then they now control that notification could have put fear, paranoia, doubt, or something in you that now changes the relationship here. It's so sad, but yeah, that's very true what you said.
Well, I'm sure you could agree that we could talk until midnight.
Yeah.
But I have a flight. Sure.
Yeah, you do.
I'm going to Australia.
You got to get to Australia, girl. Yeah.
So limited oxygen on that flight too, which bugs me. But I've had so much fun talking to you. This is so different to a lot of the podcasts I do. Yeah. But thank you for having me here and thank you for being part of the show.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.